It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. Hello, winter.
It'll be very difficult travel.
That is our top story this Friday. Snow and cold, the weather watch words this weekend.
It has been a mild winter, so it's real easy right now to say we're fully ready to go.
Scott Cook with the New York State Department of Transportation says his trucks are fueled up, stocked up, ready to roll. His advice to motorists this weekend?
Just be patient. Give yourself extra time. You live in upstate New York. You know how to deal with the snow.
Over half a foot of wind-blown snow expected this weekend in ski country. Lesser amounts away from the lakes. Everyone, though, going to get clobbered with the cold. Kevin Williams coming up in Iran. The Supreme Leader using Friday prayers today to deliver a scathing attack on the U.S., correspondent Holly Williams.
He called President Trump a clown, and he warned Iranians that President Trump would, in his words, betray Iranians while claiming to support them. That's clearly a response to President Trump's tweets in support of anti-government protesters in Iran.
Holly Williams reporting today. We also learned that 11 U.S. service members had to be treated for concussion-like symptoms following last week's missile strikes by Iran that hit our military bases in Iraq. This soldier says the blast from the attack was deafening.
Well, we heard the sounds first, and then the shockwave just like drove like even through these T-walls all the way down, and it just kind of punches you in the heart.
No one was killed in that attack. Waiting for history.
Senate, sitting as court of impeachment, is adjourned until Tuesday, January 21st at 1 p.m.
The Senate impeachment trial of President Trump will start with opening statements next Tuesday. It will mark just the third time in U.S. history such a trial has taken place.
Article 1, abuse of power. Article 2, obstruction of Congress.
California Democrat Adam Schiff reading the charges aloud in the Senate yesterday. Then Supreme Court Justice John Roberts was sworn in to preside over the trial.
Do you solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Donald John Trump, you will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and the laws? So help you God.
I do.
Roberts then swore in all 100 U.S. senators who will act as jurors in next week's trial. Constitutional expert Jeff Rosen says Roberts' role is to be a symbol of neutrality.
To be accepted by both sides as fair, as not favoring one side or another.
Rosen says sitting at the center of a political fight poses a challenge for the 64-year-old Chief Justice.
It's all the more important to have a figure who is recognized by both sides as above politics.
Harvard Law Professor Richard Lazarus is a longtime friend of John Roberts. He says the Chief Justice views this impeachment trial as an opportunity
to show the American people the nonpartisan nature of the way the judges and justices work.
President Trump says he expects to be acquitted by the Senate in a trial that could be over in 2 weeks or take as long as 6 weeks. President Trump has signed new guidelines to protect the right to pray in public schools.
In 1962, when the Supreme Court abolished prayer from schools, that was really the first shot in a 60-year war against faith by government.
Dr. Robert Jeffress, a Baptist preacher from Texas.
The president's courageous action yesterday was the beginning of the end of that war on faith. No president in history has been a greater champion for religious liberty than President Trump.
And Jeffress says the prayer proclamation by President Trump was not about creating new rights, but protecting existing ones under the Constitution. Need another reason to quit smoking? Here's one. The cost. Experts say over the course of a smoker's lifetime, he or she will have spent $1.9 million on cigarettes. Big League Baseball could face a legal challenge in the wake of the sign-stealing scandal.
A councilman says he may push lawmakers in Los Angeles to sue Major League Baseball, demanding it vacate the 2017 and 18 World Series titles. The Dodgers lost each time to the Astros and Red Sox. The managers of those teams have been fired in the sign-stealing scandal. L.A. fans say it's only fair.
The whole sign cheating and all that stuff, if that didn't happen, then I'm pretty sure the whole World Series would have went a whole different way.
The Mets ousted manager Carlos Beltran yesterday. He played on the Astros in 2017, and Major League Baseball says it's found no evidence to support stories that Astros players wore buzzer-like devices under their uniforms to tip them on pitches.
That's Steve Kaffin reporting. The San Francisco Giants have hired Major League Baseball's first female coach. Alyssa Nacken joined the team 6 years ago as an intern. She'll be an assistant this season to the new manager, Gabe Kapler. Her mom is all smiles.
She really wanted to be an advocate for women and young girls. If you really want to and you work hard, you can do this.
Nacken played softball at Sacramento State before joining the Giants organization. President Trump welcoming the LSU Tigers to the White House today.
College football national champions, the Louisiana State University Tigers.
Fresh off their national championship win over Clemson Monday night, the team and the coaches at the White House this morning.
The team is said to be one of the greatest teams, maybe the greatest team in the history of college football. Right?
The Tigers from LSU finishing the season 15-0, capturing their first national championship title since 2007. Still to come this Friday, Chris Collins learns his fate, vaping death in upstate New York, and the spotted lantern fly in Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. The weekend is here, and it's looking and feeling a lot like winter. I'll be back with details on the cold and the coming snow in just a few moments. We'll see you in about 10.
Okay, Kevin, check in the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Friday, January 17th, Governor Andrew Cuomo announcing two more vaping-related deaths in New York. Correspondent Sarah Lee Kessler.
One was a New York City woman in her 20s, and the other was a woman in her 50s from Ontario County. Last October, a 17-year-old Bronx boy died of a vaping-related illness, and a month later, a Manhattan man in his 30s died. Cuomo says these deaths are tragic but preventable. And he's again telling New Yorkers, if you don't know what you're smoking, don't smoke it. Sarah Lee Kessler, New York.
The former Western New York congressman will soon learn his fate. Chris Collins will be sentenced this afternoon for insider trading. Federal prosecutors want the 67-year-old to go to prison for 5 years. But Buffalo area attorney Paul Cambria doesn't think that's going to happen.
Here we're talking about a nonviolent business type crime. That's not the kind of crime where you should, you know, store somebody away in a lockdown facility.
Chris Collins stepped down in September after he admitted to using insider information to help his family avoid stock losses. Collins then lied about it to the FBI. In Syracuse, Mayor Ben Walsh delivering his third State of the City address last night.
I am pleased to report that the state of our city is surging. Surging forward with optimism and a newfound confidence based on the experience and evidence, our city is in fact getting stronger.
Walsh touted the Salt City's population growth and job growth along with better police and fire protection. He also announced a citywide municipal sidewalk maintenance and snow removal program.
Wherever I go in the winter, I hear two things regularly. How great it is to have sidewalks cleared on our busiest streets. And that there are still too many sidewalks covered in snow or cracked and broken to the point they aren't usable.
Walsh says he wants to get that program up and running later this year. It's a food stamp fight. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
New York and Pennsylvania are among 14 states suing the Trump administration over food stamps. The lawsuit, filed mostly by Democratic-led states on Thursday, argues that the USDA unlawfully undermined Congress' intent for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. The move would eliminate food stamps for an estimated 688,000 Americans, including 80,000 in Pennsylvania. The rule, set to go into effect on April 1st, requires able-bodied adults under age 50 and with no dependent children to work at least 20 hours a week to consistently receive food stamps. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
New York's high school graduation rate edging upward last year ahead of a review and possible revision of diploma requirements. State education officials announcing yesterday that the overall graduation rate was 83.4%. That's up just short of a percentage point from the year before. New York State health officials say flu cases are higher this year than in recent years.
The state's online flu tracker showed 11,000 confirmed cases just in the first week of the year. That's nearly triple what was seen at the same time in 2017. Doctors say this year's strain is severe, with 32 pediatric deaths across the country, including two in New York State. Doctors are trying to figure out what's causing the rise in cases, and they are reminding the public that the flu can be dangerous. Early warning signs of the flu include a fever, cough, and headaches. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
With 30% of the students home sick with the flu, West Valley Central in Cattaraugus County, New York, closing down today. Officials say all of the classrooms at West Valley will be disinfected, then ready for the students to return next week. Victims of domestic violence clamoring for better protections in Pennsylvania. Alina's Law, named after a University of Pittsburgh student who was killed by an estranged boyfriend who had an order of protection against him.
That piece of paper did not do magic. It didn't protect my daughter.
The victim's mother at the state capitol in Harrisburg pushing for passage of a law that would require electronic monitoring of domestic abusers. Here's Pennsylvania Representative Anita Kulik.
I believe that if electronic monitoring can save even one life, it is worth it.
Last year, 117 deaths in Pennsylvania were the result of domestic violence. The spotted lanternfly costing Pennsylvania $50 million and 500 jobs each and every year. That according to a new Penn State study, which says if the insects were to expand statewide, it would cost the Commonwealth $325 million.
The industry that really could be crippled, hardwood floors. Right now, Pennsylvania is the nation's number one producer of hardwoods. The fear is that the spotted lantern fly won't just weaken trees, but other states and countries may stop importing hardwood from Pennsylvania to prevent it from spreading there.
That's reporter Janelle Knight. The New York State Highway Superintendents Association has sent a letter to Governor Cuomo urging him to increase funding for local roads.
Those funding streams are very critical, and it's a unifying thing. Every municipality is going to say that they wish they had additional revenues, additional funds to put forth better services.
Bob Kiley, the highway superintendent in Irondequoit, he says local communities need more money across several programs.
First is CHIPS, our Capital Highway Improvement Program dollars. So those are funds that come directly from the state of New York that ultimately, you know, go to a local municipality.
Another program known as PAVE New York has helped fix roads across the Empire State for the past 5 years. But funding for that program dried up last year.
We receive almost $87,000 worth of PAVE New York funds, and those funds go directly to local roads. And so without that extra methodology, without that extra funding stream, you know, that's $87,000 that we need to find within a budget.
Kylie says they hope the funding is restored in this year's state budget deal that is due on April 1st, another head rolls in the sign-stealing scandal. Sunny time, two-minute drill.
Yeah, the big story with the Mets. Manager Carlos Beltran and the team parting ways over his role with the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal. Mets GM Brody Van Wagenen.
Make no mistake, it's been difficult for everyone involved. We wish Carlos and his family the best moving forward, and we hope that everyone can go on to future success that's involved in the Mets family. And Carlos as well.
Beltran says he can't let himself be a distraction to the team. Scandal has also cost the Astros team manager A.J. Hinch and GM Jeff Luhnow their jobs, and Boston Red Sox manager Alex Cora his job. While they've lost their jobs, she has a job. Sacramento State graduate making history as the first full-time female assistant coach in Major League Baseball. The San Francisco Giants adding Alyssa Nacken to Gabe Kapler's coaching staff. Nacken's former softball coach, Kathy Strahan.
I just knew early on that she was going to probably be a trailblazer and she was going to go out there and do something great. She was going to make an impact. But even in my wildest dreams, I never exactly foresaw this one coming.
Nacken joined the Giants in 2014 as an intern. On the ice in Dallas, started well for the Sabres.
Here's a chance for Reinhardt. They score! The pass off to Jimmy VC.
Tennessee.
And ended well with a 4-1 win. On Long Island, Chris Kreider connected on a power play goal with 25 seconds left in regulation. Rangers beat the Owls 3-2. Rangers head coach David Quinn.
We got two power play goals. Our penalty kill was immense. And I liked our third period until the penalties got in the way. I thought we were doing a real good job 5-on-5.
The Blue Shirts have won 4-of-5. The Owls have lost 3-of-4. In Philadelphia, the Canadians took down the Flyers 4-1. In D.C., Ovechkin time.
Off the draw, score! 2-for-2, part 2 for the Great Eight.
The Capitals beat New Jersey 5-2 behind Alex Ovechkin's hat trick. Ovechkin's 15th straight season with 30 or more goals. That matches an NHL record to start a career. And the Penguins' 4-game winning streak comes to an end in Boston, falling to the Bruins 4-1. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the boys are back. Capital Connection on the way, plus ditching those New Year's resolutions. Today's the day to do that.
A leading voice in the scientific community has sounded the alarm about gene editing. It's time for his Washington bosses to listen and act. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. As I said in a Breakpoint commentary last month, gene editing technologies such as CRISPR and what's being called prime editing are existential threats. We have no idea what our attempts to play God with the human genome will unleash on humanity. Yet, we insist on charging ahead, despite our imperfect knowledge, with an unbounded confidence in our abilities. Coming from a concerned non-scientist like me, concerns like that can be dismissed as alarmist. But what if the concern comes from the director of the National Institute of Health? Turns out that Francis Collins is also concerned. In a recent article in Discover Magazine entitled, "We Must Never Allow Our Technology to Eclipse Our Humanity," Collins called for a moratorium of at least 5 years on heritable human gene editing. Heritable gene editing technologies, like prime editing, aim to edit genes that can be passed on to future generations, along with any unintended and dangerous mutations. That differs from non-heritable gene editing, which can be used to treat people with life-threatening disorders, such as sickle cell disease, HIV infections, cancer, muscular dystrophy. Now, proponents of prime editing talk about the possibility of making, quote, any kind of DNA change that anyone wants at just about any site in the human genome. Thus, according to Francis Collins, scientists and leaders around the globe have an obligation to consider the appropriate use, if any, of heritable human gene editing. This involves scrutinizing the safety of such experiments, including the risk of unintended mutations, as well as a clear-eyed analysis of actual medical need. Anticipating some objections, the NIH director then added that the current arguments that the benefits outweigh the risks are surprisingly uncompelling. And finally, Collins insists that we must weigh the profound social, ethical, and moral issues associated with modifying the germline in ways that could change the human species forever. Now, it's good to hear someone as prominent as the director of the National Institutes of Health voice many of the same concerns that we have at Breakpoint. But as Wesley J. Smith has pointed out at National Review, it's still probably not enough. Smith notes that when it comes to the rapid development of the most powerful technologies ever invented, CRISPR germline gene editing, artificial live three-parent embryos cloning, well, the Trump administration has been, and I'm quoting Smith here, derelict. For the most part, while NIH Director Collins' statement should be applauded, it's an exception. As Smith states, unless leaders higher up the food chain engage the question in more amplified media venues than Discover, Collins' proposed moratorium will never happen. In some ways, as I recently pointed out, the Communist Party of China, by sentencing Dr. He to 3 years imprisonment for experimenting on fetuses using CRISPR, has demonstrated more commitment to reining in scientific hubris than our own government. Of course, given their track record, it'd be silly to think that Beijing cares at all about human dignity or the sanctity of human life. Their reaction was almost certainly because Dr. He's transgressions portrayed that country in an especially bad light. In our country, scientists differ from Dr. He in only one respect. They're a lot more subtle about what they're doing than Dr. He was. Simply put, we need much more evidence that those higher up the food chain in this administration care about the issue and are willing to make it a priority. For that to happen, we have to let them know it's a priority for us. Gene editing, what Smith has called biotech anarchy, is among the greatest threats to the sanctity and dignity of human life that we currently face. I'll say it again. It's an existential threat. It's time for Christians, and through them our leaders, to treat it like one. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, the weekend is here.
A very good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A fairly fast-moving disturbance coming in through the Midwest is going to bring our region snow tomorrow, some wind into the night, and then some lake effect on Sunday. So buckle up. We've got some winter conditions ahead, beginning with a cold day today. We've had some lake flurries off Lake Ontario and the Finger Lakes. They're fading, and the sun will be shining for many. High temperatures this afternoon, though, only mid-teens to the mid-20s. Tonight starts with stars, ends with clouds, low temps, single digits and teens. Snow will arrive across northwest Pennsylvania late tonight and spread north and east tomorrow, mixing with sleet and ending as some sprinkles or freezing drizzle in some spots. Snow accumulations tomorrow up several inches expected in much of the area. High temps, mid-20s to the mid-30s. Windy on Sunday with flurries, blowing snow, lake snow. Temperatures in the 20s and lower 30s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Michael, let's begin with you. The governor will be taking the wraps off soon, his budget address for 2020. Where do you think the battle lines will be drawn in Harrisburg this year? And given that it is an election year, do you anticipate that he might pivot more to the mushy middle? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the budget address takes place in early February, and because, as you just mentioned, it is an election year, the likelihood is that this is going to be sort of a calm legislative session, both from the governor's perspective as well as the legislators' perspective. They're all looking towards November, holding on to their seats, and don't want to sort of rock the boat. So it's going to be relatively calm. What the governor has consistently pushed for, though, in his tenure here is a tax on fracking, you know, an additional tax. Tax on the extraction of natural gas out of Pennsylvania's ground, and we think he's going to be pushing for that again. That's something the Republican legislature has resisted, and so that may be sort of a big battleground that we see going forward in this coming budget session.
All right, Jason, the big story this week seemed to be the bail reform backlash. There was a huge protest earlier. So many people are just frustrated by this. I think of the guy that hit and killed this student at Buff State, a man with a history of drunk driving convictions. Wasn't even allowed to be put an electronic monitoring bracelet on this guy, just walks out of jail free. There are stories like this all over the Empire State. What's being done to stop this?
Well, honestly, very little is being done in Albany. There are Democrats that are now standing up and saying changes need to be made. But ultimately, Assembly Speaker Carl Hasty has said he's drawing a line in the sand, and they just want to give it time. They don't see any changes coming anytime soon. In the meantime, that's providing opportunities for Republicans to get back on their tough-on-crime talking points in an election year. So I expect at some point there will be some changes made, but they're probably going to be around the edges and not substantive.
Mm. Well, we're talking crime and punishment, Michael. A number of Pennsylvania communities have wanted to declare themselves sort of these Second Amendment sanctuaries. Why do you feel this action is necessary? Why do they feel this action is necessary?
Well, I think they're looking just down the road a little bit to our south in the Commonwealth of Virginia and seeing when the left, the Democrats, have taken control of the legislature there in Virginia and own the governor's seat as well, that restrictions seem to rapidly come on Second Amendment rights, on gun ownership, on concealed carry, and on things like, even in Virginia, what they're proposing is a ban on indoor gun ranges, which allow legitimate gun owners to actually practice target shooting and to make themselves safer when they want to protect themselves from attack. So they're seeing what's happening in Virginia and know that there are legislators in Pennsylvania who would want to do the same thing here as well. And so they're trying to be preemptive ahead of what they think might be coming.
If you're just joining us, this is Capital Connection. Every Friday during the Noon Report, we spotlight the weighty issues in the news emanating from the state capitals with Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute and Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Jason, call this another consequence of the green light law. DMV workers
lawmakers and police even not allowed to cooperate with ICE. Critics say this could lead to an increase in sex trafficking and prostitution. Are they right?
Yeah, I think they are right. I mean, this is a situation that's now developing to where law enforcement agencies don't even have access to license records where you can see the visual representation of the person you're pulling over. So not only is there concern for the safety of the officer, but now we're beginning to see it's going to be more and more difficult to actually go after some of these crimes. License plate readers, for example, is another issue that's going to come up, and it's going to make it much easier for the criminal in New York State.
Mm. Michael, one of the saddest things we report on in the news here is the alarming suicide rate in Pennsylvania. It's gone up 34% in just 20 years. Every 40 seconds, somebody on this planet takes their own life. I can't imagine the hopelessness that you get to that seems like your only option. There was a big press conference this week in Harrisburg on this. What do you think it will take to reverse the trend?
It is an alarming trend, very sad and tragic, and especially when you see that it's hitting younger and younger ages as well, and it seems to be an intractable problem. When you think about that 34% increase in 20 years since 1999, you think, what is going on in our society that can be causing that? Now, the task force that is charged with looking at it has come up with a number of ideas of dealing with mental health issues and providing more resources there. Some are calling for what they call red flag laws to take guns out of the hands of people who might be flagged as being at risk in that regard. But there's so many other things. Some are suggesting social media and screen time and hopelessness and decreased church attendance. So many factors that all come into play. The biggest thing, I think, is that people need to be in relationship with others around them and be watching for signals and seek to get help. It's got to be sort of a one-on-one kind of thing where people are looking to help their fellow man.
Yeah, so many kids especially falling through the cracks. We've got to be mindful and be that good Samaritan, don't we? Jason, New Jersey this week hit the brakes on expanding child vaccine laws. They wanted to do as New York did and eliminate the religious exemption. They didn't have the votes. Will this cool New York jets, so to speak, when it comes to pushing this HPV vaccine?
No, I don't think that what happened in Jersey is going to have a great impact on New York. Those pushing hard for the HPV vaccine mandate in New York come from really Manhattan, where they are insulated from the blowback that is happening across much of the state. So there is some reason there why people need to stay engaged on this issue. I am cautiously optimistic, though, that if we keep up the pressure on contacting legislators and calmly describing to them that this is a clear parental rights violation, that we can be successful on this front.
Sanctity of Human Life Sunday is coming up, Michael. This Sunday, it kicks off a series of events that champion the unborn. I wanted to ask you, do you think churches are feeling pressure not to engage in this debate? I remember when all the churches, it seemed, took part in this. Seems like not as many, maybe I'm wrong, are taking part in Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. If you would answer that, and then also explain why the church is so important to promoting a culture of life.
Well, we're always happy to see churches that get involved in Sanctity of Human Life Sunday and to be talking about the issue of abortion, since it is the leading killer in our Commonwealth and in the country in terms of the numbers of deaths that happen every year through abortion. Many churches don't get involved, and I think that pressure is on them because it's viewed as a quote-unquote political issue. My good friend and Jason's good friend, Joseph Backholm, who works for the Colson Center, has done a great video on the thing is there is no such thing as a political issue. It are issues that get decided in many cases in the political realm, like abortion, because the courts got involved in that. But churches are afraid of politics. They have been forced into that corner. We think that there are better solutions for churches to look at the Bible and not to be pressured by society in that direction, but to say, what does the Bible say about human life, and then to talk about that.
And then finally, Jason, there is a way forward in Albany. Sometimes it doesn't feel that way, but you're going to be talking about this on March 17th, Tuesday, March 17th, the annual Legislative Day event, which you put on. The theme, Ever Upward, this year. So what do you say to those who feel, and there's a lot of folks who feel this way, that their voice doesn't matter anymore in New York?
Well, we want to encourage them. You know, Michael has referenced a few times hope in his comments today, and I echo those sentiments. You know, we have a mutual colleague, Michael and I, in Iowa, who's always encouraging us to think higher. And, you know, as Christians, that's so important that we do that. We're not limited by the politics of this day, but we can make a difference. However, it's going to look at a cultural shift. And so what can we as Christians do to make a difference in the culture around us and ultimately impact what happens in Albany, New York, and Washington, D.C.?
All right, and that will have to be the last word this week. But if you have questions about the great work going on at the Pennsylvania Family Institute, you can reach them at, Michael?
PAFamily.org.
And New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms does such great work fighting for you in Albany. Your website, Jason?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Thank you, guys. Capital Connection comes your way every Friday during the noon report.
A very good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A fairly fast-moving disturbance coming in through the Midwest is going to bring our region snow tomorrow, some wind into the night, and then some lake effect on Sunday. So buckle up. We've got some winter conditions ahead, beginning with a cold day today. We've had some lake flurries off Lake Ontario and the Finger Lakes. They're fading, and the sun will be shining for many. High temperatures this afternoon, though, only mid-teens to the mid-20s. Tonight starts with stars, ends with clouds, low temps, single digits and teens. Snow will arrive across northwest Pennsylvania late tonight and spread north and east tomorrow, mixing with sleet and ending as some sprinkles or freezing drizzle in some spots. Snow accumulations tomorrow up several inches expected in much of the area. High temps, mid-20s to the mid-30s. Windy on Sunday with flurries, blowing snow, lake snow. Temperatures in the 20s and lower 30s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, be safe out there and have yourself a great weekend. Finally, this Friday, so much for those New Year's resolutions. Today is Ditch the Resolution Day, a day set aside each and every year to allow some escapism from those promises millions of us made just 17 days ago. January 17th. Thought to be the day a lot of us give up on those New Year's resolutions. That is the world we live in this Friday. Have yourself a fantastic weekend, won't you? I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.